And good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Interoperability Standards Workgroup. I'm Mike Berry. I'm with ONC, and I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. We do have a few guest presenters with us today, and I'd like to thank them for participating in our meeting. All of our workgroup meetings are open to the public, and your feedback is welcomed, which can be typed in the Zoom chat feature throughout the meeting, or can be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled at about 11:55 Eastern Time this morning. So I'd like to begin roll call of our workgroup members, and when I call your name, please indicate if you are here. And we'll start with our co-chairs, Sarah DeSilvi.
I am here.
Nari Sundarrajan.
I'm here.
Pooja Bhabra.
Good morning, I'm here.
Shyla Blend.
Good morning.
Ricky Bloomfield.
Good morning.
Hans Lundbeck.
Good morning.
Christina Caraballo. Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Raj Dash.
I'm here. Good morning.
Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Nidra Garrett.
Good morning.
Raj Gopharti.
Good morning.
Bryant Thomas Karras. Stephen Lean.
Good morning.
Hong Wu.
Good morning.
Meg Marshall. Anna McAllister. Clem McDonald. Kevin McGraw.
Good morning.
Aaron Meary. Aaron Neinstein. Kiki Lama Ocean Kenton.
Good morning.
Mark Savage.
Hello.
And Michelle Schreiber is not able to join us, but I believe Joel or Bridget will be filling in for her. I don't see either on, but they should be joining. And Shelley Spiro.
Good morning.
And Ram Sharam.
Good morning.
Good morning, okay, everyone. Thank you.
This is Anna McAllister. This is Anna McAllister. I just joined. Sorry.
No problem. Thank you, Anna. And please join me in welcoming Sarah and Harish for their opening remarks.
Hello, colleagues, for our next edition of the ISWG. Our agenda, really grateful for the coordination to get this kicked off. We're going to deep dive into a diagnostic imaging data elements. Thanks for Stephen Lane for organizing all of that work today. We have guest subject matter experts presenting on that matter. We then will go into comments and recommendations. We have a couple USCD IV elements that we have to just move through that I neglected at the last meeting, and then really trying to formalize and finalize any of those level two data elements. And then we'll then go into the work plan and timeline. I want to remind everybody, and I'm going to be saying this throughout the presentation, if members of the work group are able to take ownership of drafting the final recommendations, it's very appreciated. I'm very grateful for those who've taken leadership on that so far. Again, leaning on the committee, anyone who had a work group represented as a subject matter expert on that, leaning on them to draft the first stab at it, and then we can all respond if need be. We'll then go into public comment, and then we will adjourn. Naresh, any further comments?
No comments, sir.
Okay, friend. Now on a reminder on our charge, next slide. We have, again, almost completed this element of the charge, which is to review new data classes and elements from draft USID V4 and any level two elements that we want that were not included in draft USID V4. The unstated part of our charge is to craft those final recommendations, and that really is what we need to lean into over the course of the next, I'd say, couple weeks to ensure that we have something really solid in order to review and finalize in order to get it to high tack on time. Any questions? All right, next slide, please. This is just, the update on what we've had a final disposition on and things to remain in review after our last meeting. Like I mentioned, it was, I realized that we hadn't finally disposed of specimen condition and disposition, and wondering if that gets rolled up to the work Hung was leading, and we also hadn't clarified a final disposition on time of procedure. That should not take very long. It's just that they weren't disposed of in the previous discussions. Everything else that is green is a USGIV 4 element that we have moved forward and are crafting final recommendations. Again, it's really important that we draft recommendations that note differences in definition, clarification of purpose, for instance, in the substance use elements, is those conversations regarding the difference between prescribed substances and non-prescribed substances. So all of that subtlety, if it's specific, it's part of what we should include in our final recs. If it's moving forward without any comment or any concern, then we don't necessarily need to lean into them as deeply. Any questions? Again, just to encourage anybody to review last year's recommendation from this committee, and for those of us who are new, to understand precedent as we draft our final recommendations. Next slide, please. It is now my honor to pass the mic to colleagues to discuss the diagnostic imaging data elements. Again, thank you, Stephen, for quickly and swiftly organizing a subcommittee to discuss this. We have many experts to speak to these elements and the requirements for them, and we are grateful for their attendance today. Stephen and crew.
Yeah, and I don't mind kicking us off. Thank you very much, Sarah. I want to acknowledge the ONC for, and especially Dr. Al Taylor, for bringing to our attention the fact that there were some very valuable diagnostic imaging data elements sitting in level two that the ONC had not included in draft V4. And as I dug into them, it was clear that there was a huge opportunity here for us to help to advance diagnostic imaging data and information exchange. So we reached out to the submitters of those data elements, Brian Bialecki in particular from the American College of Radiology, who's going to walk us through them with additional support of folks from his team. And then we also reached out to the folks at Care Quality and also at the Argonaut Project. Thank you, Ricky Bloomfield, for connecting those dots. And have a lot of people who want to support this. So we're going to try to go through this as expeditiously as possible, answering any questions and then looping back around and seeing if we can all support it as a group. So with that, Brian, do you want to take it away?
Sure. Thank you very much, Stephen. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak to these elements and why we believe they're extremely important to be included. I have with me Mike Tilken, the CIO of ACR, and also Keith Dreyer, who is our chief science officer and a radiologist at Mass General Brigham. Next slide. So the three data elements that we're speaking to are imaging reference, accession number, and requested procedure identifier. The accession number and requested procedure identifier really give me links to between a diagnostic imaging report and the images themselves. Requested procedure identifier can be a subset of what is ordered under an accession number or a service event. And I may get multiple requested procedure identifiers for a particular imaging study. And then again, the imaging reference is physically where can I see, stream, look at, download, get content, search for these particular images. Next slide. So the use cases really for imaging reference are, number one, the source institution can continue to update these records as source of truth, such as name changed, data that was unmatched, whatever, may need to be corrected. The imaging reports in CDA and DICOM include references to key images and have places for DICOM web annotations, hyperlinks that can be built in the report. IAG has profiled an interactive multimeter report, which would then become enabled outside of an institution by providing these references. These endpoints are already resources that are provided by, you know, all the VNA packs and image display vendors. It is called DICOM WattORS, and you're able to then retrieve the instances in native or a rendered format, so stream them into, say, a browser, things like that. The DICOM WattORS Part 18 was added to DICOM in 2011 and is, again, well supported, with obviously the ability to render them, you know, stream them, just view them in context on the screen from a link, or retrieve them for something like the continuum of care, such as surgical planning, where I may need that physical image to draw something on it. And FHIR does have an imaging study resource, which is currently at maturity level 4 in the current CI build, which does have these same references as part of it. And all of these models are well documented through IAG's web-based image access, which has been tested globally through multiple IAG Connectathons, again, going well back into, you know, the 2012 timeframe. So the next slide, please. You know, the other things I just want to bring up is, you know, really, where does this impact patient care? I don't need to worry about duplicate exams, unnecessary radiation events. I'm a patient. I show up to my referring physician's office. I can not worry about rescheduling my appointment because I don't have, you know, a CD there with me. I don't need additional infrastructure at a referring physician's office because I can stream these images across. The data is immediately made available to consumers, whether that's an ER transfer, referring physician, surgeon. It's available in the format that's needed by the consumer. So this facilitates image viewing, exam transfer, whichever is, you know, really needed. And, you know, ultimately, the creator is the maintainer of the source of truth by just having these references available. So again, those are the, you know, points that I'd like to make. And I guess if, you know, there's anything specifically, Dr. Dreyer, you might want to add, please go ahead.
Anyone else from ECR want to comment? We did invite Alan Swenson and some others who've been working on the Care Quality Image Exchange Implementation Guide just to add any comments about how the inclusion of these data elements in USCDI would support the advancement of exchange over the existing national framework. Alan, are you here?
Yeah, I am. Thanks, Stephen. Hey, everyone. It's Alan Swenson, Executive Director of Care Equality. And so Care Equality has an implementation guide published today, working largely previously with the RSNA and some work from the Sequoia project with their RSNA image share validation program. And the implementation guide that we have is really directed at imaging vendors exchanging the full diagnostic images between PACS systems. And then we've got a number of imaging vendors that helped in the creation of that, have even published some imaging journal articles on the work there and are preparing to roll that out to their customers. And so that is different than the references that were specifically talked about and Brian walked through here. However, one of the workflow issues that has come up in the context of Care Equality is the provider needing to tell the PACS system, their local PACS system, to go get an image from someone else's PACS system. And obviously there are scenarios where that exchange may not be needed, as Brian covered some of, you know, just being able to view the external images. But in many cases, there's a reason why an organization would want to actually retrieve and store within their own PACS system the full diagnostic image. Having these reference pointers in USCDI gives us some steps to solve some of those workflow problems, both within FHIR and also within CCDA. Most of the Exchange Today treatment for treatment purposes uses CCDA documents over IHE profiles. And there is a CCDA document template within CCDA 2.1 for the diagnostic image report. It's one of the 12 standardly defined document templates. It's not one that we focus on a whole lot compared to some of the other encounter summary or referral specific type templates, but it is defined. Its only requirement today, required section, is the findings section, which is a narrative section. But that largely lines up, and I would expect as we see future work and rollout of USCDI V2, it requires already the imaging test and the narrative report information, which go well in that diagnostic image report CCDA template. Also, within that same template, there is an optional section. It's the DICOM object catalog. And the intention of that section is to include the object information that goes along with the findings, the narrative within that document, including the attributes and the IDs and things required to retrieve the objects. So having this information in USCDI before for the specific references could give us a way to standardize populating that catalog information within CCDA so that the EHR system that receives this diagnostic image report from another EHR system would now have all of the necessary information to just tell the PACS system the specific information about the image that it wants the PACS system to go retrieve without the provider needing to log in and initiate a new query flow with patient matching, finding documents, et cetera, since the EHR through this CDA would already know exactly where the image exists and the references to go get it. And so this again, isn't directly considered within Carry Quality's implementation guide for the full exchange of diagnostic images, but it solves some of the workflow pieces to help operationalize at scale the exchange of those images.
Thank you, Alan. Dr. David Mendelson, who is a practicing radiologist, also wanted to share some support for this.
Sure, thank you. So I'm David Mendelson. I'm a radiologist at Mount Sinai in New York, and I'm representing the RSNA here as well. And we're strongly supportive of this. These references that Brian through the ACR have submitted facilitate all the use cases. That's the beauty of it. RSNA has focused with Care Quality and Sequoia on the actual exchange of the images, and there's large utilization and need for that, as evidenced by the exchange of CDs on a daily basis. Just my hospital alone gets 300 CDs a day. I suspect Dr. Dreyer here gets, Dreyer gets at least that many, if not more. But also just the viewing capability is another use case that we recognize as being important. So yes, I think this is very nice in that it really furthers all the use cases. Thank you.
Thank you, David. And Ricky Bloomfield, are you prepared to speak a little bit to the discussion we've been having with the Argonaut team about how this fits into the work that they're doing?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to address that. So Argonaut has approved taking on a FHIR imaging study project this year. For those that may not be familiar with Argonaut, it's a group that started in 2015, originally created the Argonaut implementation guide for DSTU2 general patient access, and that there were other use cases as well, and currently supports the annual updates to the US core implementation guide as this group puts forward additional content as part of the draft. So they've been working very closely with this work group. And for this upcoming year, this proposal was based on some early work that Josh Mandel had done as part of the Sync for Science program several years ago. And the goal is to enable patient access to imaging studies using the FHIR imaging study resource via standard DICOM web mechanisms. And the high-level goal is really to leverage existing patient API authentication and workflows so that a patient can authenticate into an existing health system. And so that individual can query for studies that are available in perhaps a parallel PACS system, and get that reference, and using the same authentication with token introspection, access that file directly so that they can view it, share it, do whatever they need. I think very similar use cases as has already been mentioned. So the goal at the end of the project this year is to have an implementation guide and actually to have people come to the table to test this both on the client as well as the server side to make sure this implementation guide works as expected. So that's the current plan. Brett Marquard, who leads Argonaut, was going to try to be here today, but he was unable to make it. But he could share more information as well if there's interest.
So thank you, everyone, for providing that background to this recommendation. Back to you, co-chairs.
Thank you. Is an understatement. Incredibly grateful for this deep and very careful work that happened in very short order. And now we're questions from the work group. I see Devin.
Great, thank you very much, Sarah. So does the having of that, it sounds, I just wanna clarify, because this sounds great, but I wanna clarify that I've got this right. If a patient gets that reference number that will be part of the USCDI, are they then able to go and get the image files without necessarily having to open up an account at the imaging service provider? It doesn't require sort of that additional legwork. We get images on our Citizen platform for users, not going through their FHIR APIs, but oftentimes we have had to make arrangements directly with these imaging vendors, including signing contracts, in order to facilitate the ability of our patient users to get this information. It sounds to me like this would streamline that pathway and that patients wouldn't like have to establish accounts with LifeImage, et cetera, but I just wanted to confirm that. Do we know?
I don't know if any of the true experts are prepared to respond, Devin, but my sense is that including this in USCDI would not automatically make all of that magic happen, but that it would move us in a direction where, you know, if patients had the path information, the accession number, et cetera, that they would be in a position to be able to make those requests with less friction, but others are certainly welcome to comment.
So this is David. There does need to be a governance structure around this for security reasons. You wouldn't want anybody just finding your link and being able to open your exams. However, the burden, I think, would be less than that you described today with the image exchange vendors. So through patient portals, this is already kind of already being introduced at many sites, but not as lightweight as this is. So that if you were in your local patient portal and looking at your record, this would facilitate that viewing on your part without the burden of an intermediate exchange vendor being visible to you. If they're there to help, it's there because they're transparent then.
Right. No, I get that. But we're also discussing sort of pathways of interoperability that are less dependent on patients needing to navigate to each and every one of their portals, such as by querying for their records through national networks or the TEFCA. Like, that's definitely on the horizon. So it sounds like there might be some work to do to get some of these imaging vendors connected up through some of those networks so that there's less legwork that has to be done if you're not using the portal to do this. But undoubtedly, this does sound to me like an important first step, just knowing even where to go to get them and to have the accession number.
It could be lighter than that. You wouldn't necessarily need those vendors. As long as, again, there's a governance model on that national framework you just described, that the patient could be led directly to their PACS.
Correct. So once you've done this, it's really institution to institution. The back-end PACS already would support the streaming of the images. So it's really just federating those, you know, back-end calls so that your, you know, the report you're seeing can, you know, once you're in the that portal, if that portal has access to where that endpoint is, those images are immediately available to you.
Okay, thank you.
So I'll say, Sarah, that the recommendation that I put into row 47 in the flow in the spreadsheet was really just for the diagnostic imaging. I did not include the image reference. I'm sorry, I did not include the other two elements that were recommended. But it sounds like our recommendation would probably be to take all three as a package.
That's what I'm hearing as well, Stephen. And I note that for the record. Hans?
Yes, thank you, Sarah. And I really appreciate the update being provided today. Tapping in a little bit of some of the comments that Ricky made and Alan, there's definitely a work in progress to understand how to do this, how to expose the fire. There are different places where that work has been done. We're going to be having some discussion to see how far has that adoption and the connectivity with the respective imaging modalities or PAC systems been progressed to enable that when it's put in USCDI, that it's reasonable to expect that all HIT to be certified can support that. Because that's still one of the criteria here. So it's not a statement of this is not a good direction to move forward in. It's going to be more on the line of the feedback that I'm going to be working through with some of the EHRA members on where are we at that this is a reasonable step for USCDI version 4. Or is it better to be done based on the work that Argonaut is doing, based on the work that IHE has done that's in play, that if those systems are going to be required to pick that up, that they indeed have adequate time and connections with other parties to make it happen. And it has made substantial progress from where it was. Are we indeed now close enough to take that next step and put it into USCDI version 4? So no value judgment at all about the value of it. That's great. Is the timing right, or is it? Are we just at the edge of it and ready the next time around? That's where I'm going to be following up with some folks to get a better sense of where do we think we collectively are in practice.
Thank you, Hans. Ike?
Thank you so much for that. I guess I'm concerned a little bit, but it's probably because of a lack of knowledge about whether we're looking at anything about image resolution information as part of the USCDI in this space. I'm really thinking about broadband access issues and broadband capacity issues and understanding both on the clinical team for rural providers as well as patients in rural environments, kind of thinking back and harkening back to the day where, you know, had dial up and trying to download a large file and suddenly getting stuck because it was going to take an hour and a half to download the file. And looking at the image side of it, you know, most of us, even as home users or semi-professional, only have screens that are capable of displaying not at full X-ray or full medical graphic resolution. So I'm kind of wondering, have we accounted for identifying resolution or prefacing an exchange with a lower quality image to meet many needs, but then backed up with a deeper quality image when it's medically necessary, or there's a patient need or interest for the larger file, with the understanding that it may take a bit longer to download and have local storage requirements.
And all of those are supported by the WattORS mechanisms. Whether I'm going to stream the image, I can adjust the quality in my requests. And again, I can pull down the entire diagnostic image, bring it locally. to do that.
Fantastic. And I guess from a task force or recommendation standpoint, I'd want to at least acknowledge not that as a limiter, but that as a consideration in actually operationalizing exchange of that data. So we're not creating a environment where somebody has got a surprise burden on connectivity or storage requirements.
Correct. And I think one of the reasons that I had mentioned the image reference and the ability to stream is that, you know, I believe some providers would not have that storage requirement.
Right, but yeah, but
and so now they could see it, and again, based on their requirement, potentially stream it at different resolutions. Correct.
Right, but even looking at the streaming component, you know, it's just that's still a matter of looking at what's my connectivity. I mean, I'm sitting at home. I have a Google Fiber connectivity at some huge rate that I don't really care about in terms of trying to access an image. I'm not worried. If I go out on travel as a state employee, I could end up in a space where I've got connectivity that's about as good as dial-up. And that would be a challenge. I might have a small iPhone to receive it on, but I'm also dealing with really low bandwidth on getting the image. So I don't really want to stream something at high resolution in that space. Again, I appreciate the technology is there, but just from a guidance or recommendation standpoint, figuring out that piece of it or making a recommendation that that piece of it also get figured out so we're not breaking or overburdening the connection network.
Thank you, Ike. And there's some critical comments, and I want to make sure that they get included in a recommendation. So from rural medicine, that's where I practice every day, deep rural Vermont, I hear that concern. Hoping to move on to Avinash.
Hi, thank you very much. Can you guys hear me? Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Very clearly.
Thank you very much. And actually, Hans and Steve Eichner, you guys hit on the question that I was going to have for Brian is that if I understood from the presentation, and the question was like, you know, the links typically give you a link to the PACS system so that your source PACS can connect to the PACS system to issue the transfer. So the question, one issue was from a certified health IT perspective, whether you know, the link would enable once, if it's part of USCDI, will that link enable automatic, or I should say without further authentication and authorization access to once that data gets exchanged to a provider. So that seems, I think what I understand from your response is the DICOM web has that kind of token introspection and the like. So that was that. I appreciate that response. The second question was really what we also have heard is that if receiving a full DICOM image with all the bandwidths in place and the issues that were discussed, it still requires the provider to have a PAC system or a VNA. And typically, like what we also seen is, or at least what has come to our mind to us is that providers with the reports may not need an entire PAC system, but would be happy to just view the image if it's a lower resolution, like a JPEG or one of those lower resolution images called reference images that can be viewed on a simpler viewer. So I would appreciate if the folks here, the experts, could discuss whether that capability is there and is there value in having providers that now would receive reports to also get a lower resolution image in addition to or instead of a full DICOM quality image, which might require both bandwidth issues and potentially additional software that they may not have.
So to answer your question, you do get both. You can not only link directly to individual key images or, you know, potential images directly in the report. So I could pull up an individual instance or a frame. I don't need to pull the entire study. I can pull that at a lower resolution. Or again, I could pull it at full DICOM resolution, even with this individual images with, and, you know, render them inside of a viewer, really the limiting factor is the screen that I'm actually looking at it on. So obviously if I'm looking at a mammography image without a 5 megapixel monitor, I'm not really truly getting it, but, you know, I can give you the entire DICOM data down inside of a browser with today's technology. You know, that is really just the viewer's capabilities. So there are plenty of web browser viewers today that are streaming data in this way that are FDA certified even for mammography primary reads.
Avinash, did that address your question?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, they did. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Wonderful. We have about 3 minutes left in our work group discussion.
And just to follow up on that, that would not require a referring physician to have any infrastructure to store that image. Once the viewing viewer is closed, the image is gone.
Thank you. That's really helpful. Any other further comments or questions from workgroup members? Just to summarize, I hear us recommending not just the one, but the three elements. I hear considerations for noting, you know, bandwidth limitations and infrastructure requirements, and I hear the answer to some of those. In our final recommendation, any other final questions or comments for our guests at this time? Wonderful then. Thank you so much for joining us and all of your expertise. And again, very deep thanks for rallying in such a quick order to create such a thorough presentation today. And recommendation as noted in the ISWG share drive. So very, very grateful. Stephen, any final thoughts before we move on? Stephen Lane?
No, thank you very much for that discussion. I really appreciate everybody coming together as quickly as possible and the fact that we could get all of the experts who know this better than anybody in front of our work group. It's one of the joys of being involved in this kind of an effort.
I'm going to break precedent a little bit to, given that it does take a village, Mark, given that we are so close to needing to get final recommendations in front of each other's, you know, in like present on the document so that we can create that final rec. Usually what we do is, you know, separate a little bit the recommendation from the presentation, but I'm just going to see if folks are comfortable with establishing consensus for moving forward with those three elements as recommended by the subject matter experts today, understanding that Stephen Lane is going to help fill out those elements on the ISWG share drive.
Yeah, I already put that in.
Okay. Any concerns from the committee on moving forward with a recommendation for these elements, these three elements as presented today?
Could you repeat them, please, just once?
Yeah. The three elements, Clem, are the imaging reference, the one that I initially proposed, the accession number, and the requested procedure identifier.
Perfect.
But not the image reference, correct?
Yes, the image reference. That was the first one I mentioned. Yeah. Okay. So that it's the path and the technical details to go find to know where the image is, whether you're going to just view it or whether you're subsequently going to try to download it, as well as the accession number and procedure identifier, which gives you the details that you need to be able to take full advantage of that information.
Yeah, I'll maintain the comments that I had earlier that there are likely some concerns around the practical infrastructure readiness, given the HIT that will be subject to this, not the standards, and not the individual items, but to have all three readily available.
This is Steve. I agree with Hans that there's some issues in kind of looking at my points about the ability to actually implement them and not overburden anybody. You know, it's more of an implementation guide issue, perhaps, than a USCDI issue, but I'm not quite sure we're ready systemically for that to be fully adopted.
Well, in Indianapolis, they can pull any image up from any of the sites. So I don't know whether we're advanced or whether it's just not that type of problem.
Yeah, and depending on what it is, maybe not all three elements are used. It might just be the accession number that is used in order to put something together. Not everybody may have the image reference. So requiring all three and understanding that may be part of the challenge there as well. So that's why I'm not sure whether not having gone through some of the Argonaut, other work, EHR perspective, whether everything is understood, who needs to do what, and make sure that there's consistent access across the different providers. So there's lots of elements there, lots of progress made, but goes back to my earlier consideration of, are we just at the edge of it and ready to go, or are we at the edge of it and still a little bit of work to be done before it's USCDI ready?
And Clem, on the infrastructure level, many urban environments have a lot higher bandwidth available for exchange than suburban and rural environments. So not to take anything away from Indiana, you know, in downtown urban environments anywhere, it may not be an issue, but as soon as you get beyond urban core, it could be a real issue.
This is Sarah. Can I ask for clarification, Hans? So is what you're saying, because there's two different types of responses, or there's three really. Is what you're saying a comment on the recommendation, or is it a not recommending?
Right. At this point in time, I would be very concerned with a full recommendation to put it at this stage. And as indicated, I'm going to have some further conversation with some to get a good sense of readiness, what systems actually maintain where they do provide access to images, because they do, there are capabilities, and what it then means to get it into FHIR and CCDA, and where the challenges are with the consistency that is needed to drive this wider. So there are some challenges out there that it's not necessarily the standard. It is the practical implementation and whether all three elements are necessary for that, or whether that's not quite there yet. That, for example, in one case, there's that the accession number is being used to put the URL together, but there's not an image reference in the way it's defined in the three. So what would that mean? They still can get a image up in the current application, but that would not be all that would be suggested to go into UCDI version 4. But what other challenges does that provide? How do you get it from the source that you can have it? Because the EHR, if we use that one for this moment as HIT, they're not the source of that information. They have to get it from somewhere else. Are those links there? Where they set up, et cetera, et cetera. So it's more than just this part.
So what I'm going to recommend then is that we do continue this conversation next week, just to reflect a little bit, because I want to honor those concerns. Hung, before we move on to the next element.
So I just wanted to comment that we seem to be holding these data elements to a higher standard than others, in that I wanted to remind everyone that our charge is to identify data elements that are essential for interoperability, not to solve the operational issues. And also, I think that we have been tasked by the ONC to provide our honest assessment of what we feel are essential elements for interoperability, and not to necessarily defer what other standard developing organizations have done or are contemplating, because I seem to hear a recurring theme that we have to check to make sure what HL7 has done or what FHIR has done. And I feel like we are obligating our responsibility to give our honest opinion as to what are the data amounts are essential for interoperability. I understand that change takes time and that there will be investments that need to be made, but we're currently on version one and we're discussing version four, which is in draft form. So that's broadcasting and that's foreshadowing for everybody who needs to be making changes. We're not asking for everything tomorrow. These have been identified as essential for interoperability in the radiology space. And not that we're asking for tomorrow, but we've been identified that these are necessary and need to be included as the floor for interoperability.
Thank you so much. We are moving on, we are over time and we need to move on to our next discussion. However, this is directly relevant to our next discussion. So one more comment from Ricky and then going into the full comment on all the remaining draft elements and level two elements. Ricky?
Great, thanks. I'll be quick. I echo the comments of Hung. I was gonna say something similar here in that many of the items that are being proposed for inclusion in draft B4 have not yet been fully modeled as part of an implementation guide. So there are gaps for all of these. One of the things that's unique about this is that there's already ongoing work that was proposed and approved independent of our committee, for example, in Argonaut to do the same work. So it's actually a little bit ahead of where some of these other data types are. So from that perspective, I think the goal here could be to include this and then kind of skate to where the puck is going so that the guides are ready and available at the same time that this becomes a formal part of USCDI and not just a draft. So I would support inclusion.
Thank you so much. Again, I think we have time to pick this up again next week, just letting the presentation settle and perhaps working through some of our concerns in the workgroup discussion section. This is this is a new presentation for us, so I look forward to doing that and coming back next week. We can now segue into the full review and comments and recommendations for everything that remains. Again, we have those. I just need to understand disposition of those two elements: procedure time and the specimen collection element. And then we need to continue our review of level two elements. Al, are you with us and able to lead us to the share drive?
I am, and I am. Just one second, please. Okay to share. Da, da, da.
I'm going to.
All right. Where are we going? Right here?
You are here. Yeah, so I believe what we were going to try to do again, because I forgot them, is loop back around to understand the disposition of those two remaining draft USID four elements. So procedure time and the specimen collection element. And the specimen collection element, let's just start with the we're here at time of procedure. This created a whole cascade of conversations regarding differentiating time of procedure from lab elements. I don't think we formally resolved our recommendation here. So I'm just trying to understand what we thought as a recommendation, as a final recommendation on this data element so that we can move forward and just formally dispose of it. Raj?
Hey, yes. So I just wanted to follow up. I talked the day after the last meeting with Dr. Liu, and he reminded us of our small group discussion where we did discuss this. But we hadn't updated the spreadsheet, and so I went back and I added the word "not" there. The date time of procedure should not be used to accommodate the collection date time for laboratory.
Oh, so sorry.
Yes, and everything. I think everything else is coherently stated there and aligned with the other two date time elements that are being proposed as renames down below.
Wonderful. Okay, so it sounds like this should have been rolled up. Maybe it was a neglect on my part, but any concerns with moving forward with the data element as with the definition clarified, the differentiation between procedure time and lab?
I didn't understand what you just said, between procedure time and lab what?
Oh, because when we initially kicked off the conversation, my apologies. So when we initially started the conversation on procedure time, we took care to differentiate the subtleties between the different times of import to lab collections and processing and a standard general procedure time, right? And a subgroup was created, again, Hung, forgive me if I'm not stating it correctly, and a subgroup was created to go deeper into those elements of the specific and important requirements for lab collection and lab processing. And the work group came back and we agreed and disposed of those, but we hadn't, in my memory, considered the disposition of the original procedure time. And so what they have done is clarified the procedure time is not equivalent to the lab times that have been specified by that work group. And that part of the definition has been updated. And we would then be able to dispose of it just as procedure time differentiated from labs. Clem, did I do a good job? Does it make sense? Sounds like it.
You know, just the word procedure is that you know, historically, I think it more. I'm just not sure what it means in this context.
There are some pretty thorough and lovely definitions within the work group. And Hung or Raj, do you want to, or Al, do you want to help clarify just beyond what I've stated?
We are in agreement, Clem, that we did not think that the procedure time clearly could be applied to lab. And so We wanted to leave it alone, so that it could be applicable to more of surgical or some kind of intervention that would be more procedural in nature. And we wanted to carve out the laboratory result report time and the specimen collection date time for lab purposes. And so that's the discussion, is that instead of trying to shoehorn lab into procedure time, we are leaving procedure time to its own domain and carving out the two lab times.
Thank you so much. Clem, does that answer your question?
No, I think it's a good direction.
Thank you so much. Al?
I just wanted to sort of reiterate that when we added the time of procedure to USCDI draft before, it was our initial thought that data element could be used to provide a timing element to more than just a CPT coded procedure, and other things that are done, including time like an IV infusion, which is a procedure, which is also medication administration, and vaccine administration, which is both a procedure and a vaccine. That it provides timing elements to those sorts of things that that are associated with a procedure, that are procedure related, and that was our intent, and our specific request when we published was to get feedback like has been provided in the lab part of that consideration, whether or not it can appropriately be used or should appropriately be used for adding timing to various ones, including lab, but also other ones like I mentioned. So that was our intent, and the feedback about lab in particular, is valued highly by ONC because it does provide us some additional guidance on where we were heading.
Thank you, Al. Hans?
Well, I would worry a little bit about mixing up procedure with administrations of drugs.
Well, I mean, as I said, I wouldn't say it was mixing up, but when something is done as a procedure, like say an IV infusion as a generic event, not a particular infusion, administration of a dose of chemotherapy or something related, but when the infusion, the timing of the infusion doesn't. The what's infused isn't relevant to the procedure of the infusion is what I was trying to get across. And so that could provide, because right now there is no medication administration time in USCDI, for example, nor is there vaccine administration time, nor is there surgical procedure perform time. These are all
but they are all procedure related oriented and might benefit from one data element as opposed to adding a timing data element for every single thing that could benefit from a timing data element in US CDI to try and reuse a single data element across multiple different data elements or data classes. That was the intent.
Thank you, Al. Any other thoughts on that thread? Are we ready to move on to Hans? Hans?
Yeah, I'd like to follow up on the comment there, which related to the question I was going to ask, is that fully support the recommendation to add the specimen collection and the lab result date and time, but very concerned not to do that in the context of where those date and times are relevant. If we only document that in procedure date time and not in the places where they actually are relevant and the specific date and times that are relevant in that context. So within lab test results, it is the lab result report date time specimen collection. In medication, it is. In immunization, it is what the time is that you're really after. Is that trying to do that in one umbrella of time of procedure, I think is actually going to create more ambiguity and confusion in the interpretation and the use of USCDI. Similar as the comments made with facility information, is that not understanding in what context that's being used and what that means is only going to add to the confusion downstream in how is that implemented, how is that applied, where did I need to do it, where did I not need to do it, going to make that much harder. So I certainly would recommend and suggest that that as part of our high-tech recommendation, to consider that we do indicate that these times not only are relevant, but they are defined and clarified in the context of the data classes where they apply. And that can then help further the downstream processes to apply them correctly.
Thank you, Hans. So with those caveats, so clarification on what was reviewed by the subcommittee, clarification on how that then affects the original data element of procedure time, considerations of application, any concerns with moving forward with this original procedure time, which has been updated, really just to say that it's not what the work group worked on. any concerns with moving forward with this at this time?
No concerns with the procedure time to move forward, specifically mm-hmm. for the procedures that were meant to be included in procedures itself, but really get the other data times in the data classes where they clarify what that really means.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Any other final, any other final thoughts? Anybody have their hand raised? I do not see that. Okay. Okay, so I believe we can now move on, and maybe this is the similar thing to before. I think we had, did we dispose of specimen condition and disposition? Was that part of the, if we scroll over to the work?
Yes.
Okay, we're good there?
And so, okay. Yes, this is a CLIA required element right. That, if a laboratory has set up rejection criteria, and those are based on interference or inability to do the testing, and a clinician asks for the testing anyway, that there has to be documentation as part of the result that it was performed despite the specimen not meeting a rejection criteria, because that's an important piece of information when a clinician is interpreting the results.
Perfect. Hans?
Yeah. I'm not sure whether I interpreted last week's instructions correctly, but I went ahead with a couple of places to provide some draft suggestions based on what was there and clarifications. On this one, I was wondering, is in the way that we talked about separating out the component or the concepts of condition and specimen to really focus on that, did the draft capture that? And is the term suitability appropriate? Or is there also, in addition to that, since the notion I thought was that our main focus is on understanding when a result is resulted and it used a specimen that otherwise would not be suitable for the test, that that's the main one that I thought was coming out of discussion to move forward. Did that capture that, to summarize that from the discussion? I'm not sure whether the draft that I tried to put together captured those nuances between that. And Hong, in particular, you, is that that probably requires more wordsmithing and clarification than what I attempted to do. And I hope I didn't overstep the instructions.
Hans, I'm very grateful for all the work you did in that. Yeah.
I don't know what's possible in terms of renaming or if that's the best path forward versus creating two terms, but I can immediately think of issues where suitability doesn't apply, like the specimen's lost.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think the name might be confusing people because this is only restricted to the fact that a testing has been performed on a non-suitable specimen, and that needs to be conveyed forward to all future interpreters of the result. And so mm-hmm. this has nothing to do with whether or not that we include with every single result that the specimen was suitable. That's not the intent of this. It's purely that if the testing has been performed despite the specimen not meeting suitability requirements, that everyone in the future knows that.
Or the reason why testing, why there was no result or could not be resulted, right?
Well, if the testing is there, if there's no result, then it wouldn't be performed. It would just be canceled. This is part of the occurring in every laboratory today, that there is a comment that is put with the result that says the specimen was hemolyzed, which would ordinarily cancel the test, but it was performed at condition request. And hemolysis is a known interference for this test. Right now, that is captured as a result comment that could potentially fall off at a future date and not be conveyed as part of the result. And instead, it should be captured as a discrete element through SNOMED or LOINC that could carry with the result throughout the ecosystem so that no matter whether it's conveyed through an HIE or through an interface, that information needs to be preserved.
Is that clarity sufficient to come to a discussion on final recommendation? Are we good to proceed?
I think so.
This is Clem. I was on mute. I said some very intelligent things. But I think there are some elements in HL7 messaging to accommodate some of these. I think we just ought to make sure we reconcile what we're saying with all, what already exists in the messages.
And I'm pretty sure, Clem, is that they do this concept specifically here would fit with that, and there are elements available that it is the making sure that the vocabulary is in sync with this, but it's being communicated, it's available in regular messaging.
Okay.
So I hear no concerns. So in my mind, there were these two hanging elements, and so it sounds like we have a disposition for them. And so now we can say the USCDI V4 element is complete and move on. And again, I just want to ask those who were deepest in this work to create the recommendation draft so that we can respond to it. So any of those folks who are really truly expert in this would be helpful if you start creating the recommendation, the final recommendation in the appropriate column. I believe now, Al, we're ready to move on to advanced directives, which we saved because Grace, you were with a patient at the last meeting and you're with us now. We didn't want to discuss the level two elements that were suggested by you in your absence. Grace, are you with us?
Yes, and the topic could not have been more fitting because this patient had an advanced directive, but it was, of course, not on file and no one had a paper copy. So my life has come full circle.
So wonderful. Would you mind leading us through your recommendations that you put both this one and the next? That'd be really helpful.
Sure. I apologize. So it was the worksheet. Okay, so column L.
So the element is advanced directive. And just briefly discuss your justification for recommendation, and then we can have a discussion and see and dispose of it.
Sure. So I know that there's been extensive recommendations and discussions about this element. I'm coming from a patient and care partner perspective as a patient myself and someone who works at the intersection of end of life care and the essence of having this document actionable. The end of life care information is absolutely critical to patient care, and it really prevents harmful, unnecessary medical treatments. I'm highly encouraging everyone that we do our best to include whatever elements that we can to push this forward with recommendations to HITECH. It's really also addressing the needs of the underserved communities because people who do not have a voice and who are not introduced to this concept really do suffer and face a plethora of different invasive, unnecessary treatments, and their dignity is and wishes are not preserved at the end or lost in translation. Really a key learning at this side post the COVID-19 pandemic really was that the suffering and inequities caused by a lack of having advanced directives available to make these critical end of life care decisions is something that's non-negotiable. We really need to do our best. And I think we have a really good platform here and enough information to push some things forward. I did have a question that I flagged in red. I wasn't sure. I did not get an answer on this to confirm if the following LOINC code was applicable. Again, I'm not an expert in the LOINC code, so deferring to work group members on any guidance there that may be helpful.
Thank you. Any discussion from the work group or comment on Grace's question regarding the LOINC code element? Hans? Well,
I'd just like to be sure. I don't understand the game very fully, but there's a couple other things that are like advanced directives, right? Living will, durable power of attorney. Are they just special cases, or should we be aware that there's parallel creatures that serve a similar function? Does somebody know?
Many patients also, that's a great question. Many patients do also have a power of attorney, but essentially when you go into any type of care, if you have a procedure that's in the hospital surgery, most patients are presented and asked if they have an advanced directive. And if they do not, they are presented with general forms to fill out their wishes. So advanced directive is probably the at point of care, the most commonly used terminology. That's why I'm referring to it that way in my recommendation.
Okay. And it's also of note, it of course, from a clinical perspective, is a requirement for Medicare annual wellness visits to document the advanced directive and the presence of it and a clinician agreement to comply. Hans?
A question that I have on how to we need to consider advanced directive and progress it in light of the discussion we had a week or two ago on with the presentation from Maria Muang as well. Currently, the way that advanced directives with the PACIO project and otherwise is progressing is very much building on the concept of a care plan. And therefore, it is not a care plan that is necessarily created by a clinician, but it's created by the patient effectively with the cyst, however it's done. So what I'm wondering is that should this be that also further help advance the aspect of how to get that in? And as Maria, I think, indicated with by way of having even PDFs or scanned or structured or otherwise, and the comments that we made about how to progress care plan with a type of care plan as a start in UCDI version 4, and then explore the different elements in more structured fashion for the next version. Should this be a type of advanced directive that we recommend so that it can start to flow along with that and take advantage of the overall advances in care plan and then have the special considerations for directives being then built on top of that as well? So it's just a general construct of where would we make the recommendation as a separate data class or as a type of care plan in light of the, I think it's line 23, recommendation of a care plan, and let it progress with that.
Thank you so much, Hans. Pooja?
Yeah, sorry. Can you guys hear me? I'm on my phone.
Yes, we can.
Okay. I guess I just had a question about this. I'm trying to understand exactly what would be included, and maybe this goes to Hans' question, and also I saw Aaron posted as well. Is this the actual advanced directive? Is it a notification saying that this patient has an advanced directive? I guess I'm just not understanding what we're including.
Chris, I don't know if you have a comment on that. I know that Ricky has his hand up and he had a suggestion in the work group discussion. Do you want to lead and then?
Sure. Go ahead, Grace.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to kind of echo that and what Hans said, which is, I think the most important principle that we're trying to achieve here is to make the information available to those who need it. That's the high level goal. There are a number of ways to solve that problem. What I had suggested in our previous meeting was one of the most straightforward ways to solve that problem is simply by conveying the document itself in whatever format it might exist, whether it's a PDF or image or whatever, and code that with the appropriate LOINC code. Separately, there could be other ways to consider providing more structured information, but that the most important short-term recommendation we could provide is some guidance around simply providing this as a note to start with, just so we can unblock what is really the main problem we're trying to solve.
Mm-hmm. I really like all of the suggestions, and I think, Hans, I really appreciate, too, recognizing the complexity and Pooja, too, what's included. Al and I have also spoken about advanced directives in the past, and there are certainly multiple components, and it varies facility to facility, patient to patient, but to Ricky's point, what is our on-ramp right now for what is available so that we can set the stage with that, whether that's coding with LOINC. I'm not sure what the lowest hanging fruit is, but I do feel that from multiple conversations that this almost becomes now a data either a care plan or it becomes a data class with us specifying what the elements need to be moving forward.
And I'd be happy to draft some language to reflect what I had suggested if the group is in agreement and work with Grace on that.
And I'd be happy to help out with that again, Grace, if you would like.
Fantastic. Would love that.
Great.
I think, Vicky, the part of the thoughts that you have to start out with that agreed. The care plan in its current way in Fire US Core may actually already do that. So I want to look at that and then continue the building off that we are discussed in the care plan. To start to type it, start to consider it being more structured than more of a text or a reference.
Thank you so much for the collaborative effort here. Just a final thought. So do we have any concerns? Oh, Mark is offering to help too. Any concerns with moving this forward with the recommendations and about how to include it that we've heard today? And the understanding that Ricky and Hans and Grace and Mark are going to be working on this together. Mark?
So I'll just flag a comment I added above on the care and treatment items, which just trying to figure out what happens when there's an inconsistency, when something like a personal representative or a durable power of attorney for healthcare gives something that's different from a directive that's different from an advanced directive. I don't think that's necessarily within our purview, because we're just collecting the data elements, but I'm just thinking through how that works out in real life. So I'll just leave it there. I don't think that if I'm correct, that's not something for us to resolve here.
It's a great point, Mark. And usually then you have ethics and a social worker and like a family intervention, but that's out of the scope of what we need to do here, I think.
Is there a normal Trump order between those things? That is, was one thing Trump the other? You don't know. I don't know for sure.
I'd be happy to address any of these offline because these can go in a number of different directions and I want to be mindful of time.
And I'm not talking about a politician. When I
Thank you, Grace and Clem. So I hear consensus for moving forward with this. I hear the committee working, little subgroup working on the final recommendation. Very, very grateful. We have a little bit of time left before we go to public comment. So I believe, Grace, you actually have one of the next elements of two. I'm just, if we go down, Al, we covered reclassification. We covered Mark's reissuing of the gender harmony recommendations from last year. And I believe, Mark, if you could just lead, I think it's just almost copying last year's ISWD recommendations in the final recommendation, that would be helpful.
Yes, happy to do that. I did note there's between last year and this year, ONC has broken down sex for clinical use into discrete elements for the different things like labs, diagnostic imaging. It's a very minor tweak, but it'll basically look the same as last year's with that slight tweak, and I can take care of that.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Yep.
Moving on, so I believe if we go down to the next level two element, Al. These are Raj's comments. They were included. So next, going down again. No, one more. I believe, Grace, you had another one, I think. Next one. These are all included in the work the subcommittee did. Was there an operative note one? I thought there was one.
Yes, there was operative note.
Yeah, and maybe, I don't know where that is. It might be higher, actually. We might have skipped it. But
it's row 23.
Thank you so much, Hans. I don't want to, that I'm working from memory here. All right, so I believe this is another hanging element from that we did waited for you for, Grace. And I think it's one of the last new level two elements that we have to discuss here. Grace, can you lead us in the conversation similarly to how you did with advanced directive? That would be appreciated.
Okay, sure. I think we did introduce this and then we ran out of time. So this, just as a refresher, was previously discussed and recommended, I believe, to HITECH from a patient, but was not accepted, of course, and included. So I'm revisiting here, and to summarize from the patient and care partner perspective, the operative note is something that is extremely important, detailing, of course, the details of the surgical procedure, but also it's one of the only sources of truth for patients to have details on any tissue or samples that may be collected that then would allow them to connect with pathology and information that is there. So when it's not shared, it's a glaring, gaping hole in the medical history. While I recognize that all notes are supposed to be shared, operative notes seem to fall by the wayside. So I am advocating if we can find a way to collaboratively acknowledge the importance of the operative note and to have it recommended to HITECH. And I am not going to read all of what I popped into column K, but transferred what was previously recommended with any notes that are applicable below.
Al?
Grace, thanks for your work on this recommendation, both now and in the past. I would ask or suggest that as you craft the final recommendation, that you frame the recommendation as differentiating operative note from procedure note, which is, as everybody knows, is a data element in USCDI and the clinical notes. So just because ONC has been, you know, considering operative note versus procedure note for some time. And there's obviously some similarities, but there's also some key differences. So if you could do that, that would make the recommendation, I would say, much more actionable.
Thank you for pointing that out, Al.
This is Ricky. I would also note that the current version of US Core actually calls out surgical operation note and the LOIC code there as one of the types that systems are, quote, encouraged to support. So there's already a pretty clear path there to move that from encouraged to one of the shall support data types.
I support Ricky on that.
Yeah. And just a real quick historical note, the procedure note, but not operative note, was one of the primary note types that were taken on by the Argonaut project, which is what crafted our original, which was what informed our original list of 8 clinical notes. So I just put that historical context out there as the reason that we initially adopted procedure note and not operative note.
Any other further comments on elevating this critical level 2 element to USCIV4 at this time with all the conversation we've had so far? Thank you for all the links, Stephen. Any opposed to doing so? Again, Grace, it sounds like you are leading the drafting of another final recommendation. Look for any to support her in that work. And that's, if it's okay, we're all here to support you in that. Very grateful. We are very close to our public comment period. There are 2 other entries, entry number 33 and 34. I at least want to make sure we socialize them. I just didn't want to miss them. One was care team members presented by Aaron. And then we have, I believe, provenance that we haven't discussed yet. I mean, I think I'm correct in that. Aaron, have we discussed care team members yet? I do not think so.
I do not think so either.
Yeah. Would you mind leading us in discussion of this, as much as I understand we have limitations of time, but it would be if we could.
Yeah, this one might be pretty straightforward. I was just skimming through the USCDI website and noticed that as part of the care team member data class, provider NPI is not yet included as an item in USCDI. So wanted to bring that forward. There are very clear and specific standards for it. I don't think I have more to say on this one.
It's pretty straightforward. Al, any questions?
I just want, and I think this is probably just review for everybody, but we had also considered adding provider NPI as a specific data element, but elected instead to have a more generic care team member identifier, which one of the examples is provider NPI and NCSBN ID, the one for nursing. So those were 2 examples. So care team member identifier is out there as one that we feel like could incorporate both provider NPI or a nursing ID or some other ID that is appropriate for the context.
Thank you so much, Al. Shelley?
Yes, totally agree with adding this to V4. This is an important field for care planning. We need to know who the members are. And I think this is a very, very important one to move forward in V4.
Thank you, Shelley. Al, do you have further comments? Or are you just making, your hand is still raised?
Oh, sorry. I thought somebody usually puts my hand down for me, but no, I'm done.
Okay, Hans?
I'd like to support Elsa's comments that in the definition of care team member identifier, NPI is already recognized. It's also in the CCDA and FHIR US Core in that construct. So rather than defining a variety of different identifiers as separate elements, recognizing the types of identifiers and then where needed, add that to the definition of unidentified, like in this case, care team identifier, seems a very reasonable way and a consistent approach with how such data is expressed. So I don't think it needs a separate element, but it's great that it's already there. It actually raises a question, is that if level 2 or others are already effectively supported in this way in USCDI, not needing an addition to it, it's already there, maybe not as an individual data element, but as a type on that data element, the component of it, if you will, then how do we start to identify in level 2, 1, et cetera, and mark those as already satisfied? And we don't need to look at them anymore because it might give the impression that it's not there. It actually is.
Aaron, any thoughts on that? I know we have to proceed to public comment.
Yeah, I mean, I'll defer to the expertise of Al and Hans on this. If people feel like it's already there, then I agree. I think the website is misleading. And maybe that's where we should focus attention.
That seems like
it does give the impression that it's not already included.
So that seems like a great action item. Is the recommendation would be not necessarily adding the specific element, but clarifying the importance of this being included in the definition of the stance. Agreed? Okay. Moving to public comment, we are almost through. Mark, we look forward to coming back next week and trying to resolve the provenance element.
All right, so we're going to pause our work group conversation, which has been great, to open up our meeting for public comment. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you're on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause for just one moment to see if any of our members from the public raise their hand. Not seeing any hands raised at this time, Sarah, so I'll turn it back to you. Thank you.
Maybe we don't have to wait till next week. So if we can return back to the spreadsheet in our last few minutes and maybe start, Mark, talking about provenance, which is where we were, that would be great. And we'll just use our time till the top of the hour.
Sure. Al, are you going to show that or should I just do it on my browser?
Thank you, Al. Okay.
So the next entry number 34, I think, is where we are.
That is correct.
Excellent. Okay. So this is repeating a recommendation that the work group developed last year. It came up last year in especially around the importance of having self-reported data elements for race, ethnicity, gender identity, disability status, pregnancy status. We were going through all of those elements. We talked at length about how important it was to know who was the author of those elements. Sometimes it's the individual, sometimes it's the system, sometimes it's a clinical observation. So those were the use cases we discussed last year. We therefore developed a recommendation to add author. It didn't make it to the provenance data class. It didn't make it. So I'm just renewing the same recommendation here.
Thank you so much, Mark. Any comments or questions regarding the resurfacing of this element?
Just a comment that much energy was put into bringing this forward in prior years, much discussion, much support, and I agree with Mark bringing it back up. I think we need to stay on these things, even if they don't make it 1 year. We need to bring them back because they're important.
Yes, as a longtime community organizer, absolutely, persistence. any other final comments on moving and re-recommending as a critical data element? I believe I hear consensus.
Well, let me just comment. Family history is a complicated beast. It can be structured. You can do a family tree, et cetera, et cetera. So what are we really talking about here? Just sort of narrative?
No, Clem, we're talking about adding author as a data element.
Oh.
So this is not necessarily, it would be relevant to knowing that the patient was the author of the family history data, but this is just about the author data element.
Okay.
All right. I hear barring objections, which I hear none. We thank you so much, Mark, for resurfacing this. And I believe we are at time with a very productive meeting. we can go back to the slides. There's going to be a lag. What I'm just going to urge folks to participate in is as much as possible, volunteering and leaning into those, to the synthesizing the components in the work group discussion into final recommendations. Many again, of those subwork group leads are taking leadership on that. Any of us who were not part of those subgroup leads, if we can just please lean into that, we hope to have what I'm going to ask for is some final recommendation starting text when applicable, again, when there's thoughts on just pass or thoughts on the element that require some kind of commentary for each of the elements prior to our meeting next week, right? So if folks can volunteer, again, all those subcommittee group leads are, we're leaning on them to take lead on the areas that they represented. But if others in the work group are willing to start synthesizing the work group discussion in the final recommendation draft, that would be really helpful. And you can just put your name in that column. Naresh, any other final thoughts before we adjourn?
Social order thoughts there.
All right. Thank you so much. We will see you next week.
Thank you.